Do you love and hate the hospitality industry? Then you are in the right spot. Join your hosts, Kyle and Sarah, Sean Walsheth, and Jensen Cummings as they talk shop and give real insights into the latest restaurant news and most pressing issues facing hospitality professionals today. Welcome in to the Restaurant Idea Factory.
Welcome into Restaurant Idea Factory today. What's today? Friday, February 17th. We're going to get into it. This feels like a heavy show today, guys. I don't know why. So we've got to make sure to bring some levity today. Riff 008, Why Don't Restaurants Change? Ruth Reichel's documentary at South by Southwest. New York restaurant workers unionize. I know that's big news for you up there in New York, Kyle. Let's see. What else are we potentially talking about? We got the restaurants that inspired Panda Express, maybe. Rocco DeSpirito's out there talking about stuff. We got formerly incarcerated workers out there. Sriracha billionaire. We got a lot of interesting stuff potentially to be able to talk about today. So this random fact stuff has been super fun. I mean, the fact that Corey made a clip of Sean talking about the love of the opera and ballet, like that was just, that felt good. That was like goofy and silly. I couldn't find the picture. I'm going to find it of me in the glasses and the purple Lakers sweatshirt. Did you find the Snoopy picture?
I didn't, but I can.
All right. We got to find those pictures.
You got to do your homework, bro.
Sean already just grabbed off the wall the picture of him when he's like 13 years old. So, Kyle, exactly. we got to really step it up. So, what's a random fact about Kyle and Sarah?
I got kicked out of college for a semester. There's a random fact.
Just a semester?
Just a semester. And I successfully negotiated that I didn't have to go home, that I spent that semester at school.
So this like is your first ever. Deal? You brokered your first deal?
I brokered my first deal. I was like, Dad, look, you don't want me home. Let's be honest here. Let me just stay here. I'll work. And I worked at Foot Locker and basically just partied for a whole semester.
You didn't want to go back to Long Island, huh?
I did not. At the time, I didn't. I would love to go back now, but what's that?
What college were you at?
Franklin & Marshall.
Where's that?
It's in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Amish country, dude. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say that's just all I know.
An hour northwest of Philly.
Okay, so you didn't go that far.
Not that far. No, in hindsight, I would have gone farther and warmer.
Heard.
I got booted.
All right, Sean, you set the bar really high last week. What is random fact of Sean Walsheth for this week?
Well, it's not very random if you know me, but this part of the fandom most people don't know, and that's in 2017, I was inducted to the Pro Football Ultimate Fan Association. So I went to Canton, Ohio, which is where I believe the organization has about 700 super fans across all 32 teams. It's a nonprofit charity of all the teams, of all the fans that actually give back. So all of the crazy fans from every NFL team that you see typically on TV, whether it's Eagles fans,
like J-E-T-S, Jets, that dude?
Yes, yes. All the crazy fanatics, I am part of that organization. I was jumped into the gang. 2017, I was in the parade the same year that LaDainian Tomlinson got inducted into the Hall of Fame. We were actually our fan float in front of 200,000 people. We were right in front of LT and Lorenzo Neal. So that was my fandom into Charger fans. So when you think of super fans of any NFL, actually any sports thing, I've been jumped into one of the greatest charity gangs there is, and that's a Pro Football Ultimate Fan Association.
Can I just say something? The fact that LT is referred to anybody but number 56 on the New York Giants is fucking insane.
Did you have LT on your fantasy football team? Because if you did, you'd call him whatever you want to call him. Those years that he was putting up those stats.
You know what? I think he was like 48 points a game. I called him Cash in the Bank.
Exactly. Lavania is a beast, man. I was remembering him because he went to TCU, obviously TCU in the championship game, so he was on the sideline a bunch, and that was bringing back memories for sure. LT is Lawrence Taylor, the greatest defensive player of all time, for sure. All right, so mine, I was inspired by a call I got a couple days ago from Markus Franzbecker, my best friend since I was 4 years old. When I was 2 until 7, I lived in Germany. So ich spreche Deutsch. And
wow,
it like totally changed my perspective on like the entire, like my whole life has really been such a unique perspective because I got to move around a lot. Like I wasn't one of those kids who grew up in the same neighborhood in Long Island my entire life and had the same homies in my entire life. So it's interesting. I'm really good at making acquaintances, not as good at making lifelong friends because I've moved around so much. But Markus Fonsbeck is one of those people. So I got to talk to him. He's decked out in Denver Broncos gear top to bottom. He came to visit us in Denver and is enamored with American culture because he had the American friend growing up, learned how to speak English from MTV.
Oh, hell
so,
yeah.
So he's straight gangster. He's like, I don't know, 6'4", 320 pound, big, big German dude. So anyway, random fact, shout out to Markus Fonsbeck and my family. Got cousins out there in Germany as well. So I think about that a lot. That was super cool to be able to have a friend for how many years is that? 36 years?
It's a long time.
It's a long 38?
You're 38?
Long time. I was 4 when I met him. 36, 4, 40? 40.
You're 40?
Yeah. 1982. Yeah, you and I were both born
that's
in
right. That's what I thought. I was so the hell of a sudden you how did you lose years?
Did I do that math wrong? Yeah. 36 years. I was 4 years old. That's 40.
I thought you were 2. Okay.
So 4. I'm gonna talk about my Japanese heritage random fact next week. Okay. Cliffhanger. And so I'm good at math, Sean.
Okay, good. That's all I'm checking.
All right. I love that. Those are great little random facts. Let's officially kick off this show. Kick it to destiny.
Do you love and hate the hospitality industry? Then you are in the right spot. Join your hosts, Kyle and Sarah, Sean Walsheth, and Jensen Cummings as they talk shop and give real insights into the latest restaurant news and most pressing issues facing hospitality professionals today. Welcome in to the Restaurant Idea Factory.
All right, Game Face, we got some headlines to read here, fellas. Rocco DiSpirito names the biggest mistake chains are making with New York-style pizza. The 50-year-old Pasadena restaurant that inspired Panda Express gets a sleek new design. Did not know that Panda Express was stolen from an actual restaurant. That makes me think of Taco Bell. Cafe Mita, I've been there, where Taco Bell stole their idea from. It still exists today. How one of Philly's best pizza spots creates jobs for the formerly incarcerated. How Vietnamese refugee David Tran became America's first hot sauce billionaire.
Wow.
Wow. Sriracha, he's a billionaire. That's unbelievable. Let's see, the old restaurant model is toast. We asked, you answered, what would you pick for your last meal on death row? It makes me think of Bourdain. I remember you used to ask that question of a lot of people. California's most disadvantaged workers have widespread chronic health issues. New Jersey spaghetti restaurant bans children under 10. I told that one to my boys, and they want to go. Six and 8-year-olds. They're like, fight the power. All right. The spectacular rise and fall of fake meat in America. And lastly, why becoming a regular pays off. Which of those do we want to kick off with? Our at-large bid for today. What do you guys
spaghetti
think?
Spaghetti guy.
The Kids New Jersey spaghetti restaurant. All right, so this is from foxbusiness.com. And I got a little quote for them is what I pulled from this one. We love kids. We really, truly do.
Totally.
Nettie's House of Spaghetti in Tinton Falls, New Jersey had to say. They quoted, I think, a lot of things you'd expect. It's messy. Kids are running around and dangerous as you're carrying things around. I don't know. They're loud. I think noise was a thing. So let's get into this. As all three of us being fathers, I'm sure we have opinions on this. Banning kids at restaurants. Who wants to pick this one up?
Get it.
Me?
Yo. Yeah. So usually you guys are fighting over that. The first.
So I mean, we have an interesting perspective. We opened up a sports bar. We turned a breakfast concept into a sports bar, and we started hosting fight nights. And the only time that we did not allow children into our establishment was on a big fight night. So whether it was boxing or UFC, it was 21 and up. And we did that for a reason. Those didn't happen until 7 p.m. At night is when we started charging entry fees, so cover for people to come in. But we did that strategically to create a safer environment so that, you know, number one, there weren't kids that were running around. It was later at night and we were a bar. However, one of our founding principles as a restaurant was to make sure that all families felt welcome, whether any game was on. So, you know, on NFL Sunday, we wanted to make sure grandparents and little kids felt welcome in a sports bar environment. And I know that doesn't seem crazy in 2023, but back in 2008, when you associated sports bars, it was with places that you wouldn't bring families. You wouldn't bring your wife, you wouldn't bring your girlfriend, and you certainly wouldn't bring kids.
Why do you think that was? What it makes me think of right away when you said that was the Coors Light Girl commercials. Like so much of sports commercials, especially, were so over-sexualized.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like to just ridiculous degrees. I remember that a lot. So that probably,
if you think about how much the landscape of in-home entertainment, flat screens, the ability to watch NFL, you know, red zone, any of these things that have changed over the last 15 years specifically, there's not a big need to figure out these out-of-market games. You know, out-of-market games, right. Satellites, figuring out, hey, I care about, you know, Manchester United. I can only watch it if I'm streaming it on the internet. All of those things have changed dramatically. So it's much easier for a super fan like myself. We built a place for other super fans. We catered to all 32 NFL teams, Fight Night, UFC. But back to the question of what is a Jersey restaurant? Every restaurant can make their own concept. You know, what we choose to do, if you are a fine dining restaurant and you're have dress code attire, you know, unfortunately, I can't go into a fine dining restaurant with a hat on. You know, that's ultimately like, are they discriminating against me? No, that's just literally, that's their concept. That's their thing. You know, if the spaghetti place,
you guys can rock those marquee hats,
the spaghetti place doesn't want to have kids in their restaurant, you know, that is their choice as a business to choose to not to have kids. Do I think that that's a bad choice? I don't know. I mean, obviously we're talking about it, so they're getting a lot of attention on their business. But what is that into the future? You know, I don't know what their business model is. I try to be in the hospitality mindset where we take care of everyone. And if you can't take care of kids, then chances are you probably can't take care of adults either.
Oh,
what's the name of this place? What's the name of this restaurant?
Nettie's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I think
House of Spaghetti. Nettie's.
Yeah, exactly.
House of
that's what I was thinking. Nettie's Spaghetti. Like, that's exactly where my head went. I
instantly want to make fun of this place just because of the name of it. It's like, it feels like it should be tchotchke anyway. So why wouldn't kids fit into that motif? I don't know.
Nettie's. It seems weird to ban at a spaghetti concept.
Exactly. Like,
I'm not talking about like
10 years old.
what are we talking about?
What does 10 years old mean?
Why is that the cutoff?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a weird number. I mean,
arbitrary.
What are you bringing in a birth certificate? My kid's 11.
Exactly right.
My kid's 9.
Yeah.
Like you have to be less than this tall to ride the Nettie's House of Spaghetti ride.
Dude, two things crossed my mind. One is I like what Sean said. I'm like, the best restaurant sign I ever saw. Like all those kitschy restaurant signs that exist. Mm-hmm. The best one I ever saw was, remember, you came in here. So they can make the rules. Like you voluntarily walked in here, and if they don't allow 10-year-olds, then they don't allow 10-year-olds. I just don't understand. Like when we had Pulpatina, it was like people were like, "Do you have a kids menu?" And like the whole place is pasta and pizza. Like, well, it's all a kids menu. Everything is a kids menu, right? So
they're asking for kids portions and prices is what they're really asking.
So we were like, "Yeah, you want a half portion of spaghetti? Yeah, it's $9. I'll sell that all day long. I can put a line of 10-year-olds around the block. That's what they want. And that was the reason parents came in, because the kids love the spaghetti. Then the parents are having, you know, a bottle of wine. They're having an appetizer. They're having dessert. To me, that was like, I mean, it's the old McDonald's model, the Happy Meal. You know, they make a mess, clean it up. That's your job. I don't know. I don't know. It seems silly to me, because the kids drive a lot of dining decisions. And that's for certain concepts. And I think
all of the dining decisions, like, are driven by kids for us today. So this was interesting, because I tried to take a look at all perspectives. For me, I think it's ridiculous at its face, right? Like you're a spaghetti place, right? You're not per se.
Yeah.
Like let's get over ourselves for a second and recognize that you're a restaurant. So from that perspective. Now, as restaurant food people, Betsy and I take the kids out, and we definitely do see other families. I'm like, why are you being a shitty guest right now, family X? Like, why are you making that mess? Clean up after yourself. Like, why are you one-timing those servers to death? We see it, and it makes us uncomfortable quite often because we're grouped in with them. And I think in the article they said something about that where they're sorry for the families with well-behaved kids. I don't know if we have well-behaved.
Well, you opened up a restaurant, not a daycare, and the way that some of the people, parents especially, are coming into, and if you sell alcohol, even worse, because the parents are there and they're like, all of a sudden, hey, the restaurant's not responsible for taking care of your kid that's out on the street. Like, would you mind getting up from your cocktail and going out to the street and taking care of your child in the oncoming traffic, please?
See, that I've had experience with kids that are pretty horrific, standing on tables, crawling on their belly on the floor. Yeah. Like, I don't know. You know, it is what it is. But I'm looking at their website. I mean, I love their branding. It looks awesome. But it says they're not open Valentine's Day and they're closed all next week for winter break.
Winter break?
Yeah, exactly. What are they? Middle school?
It sounds like a daycare.
Yeah. You know?
My kid's up for daycare too.
Yeah. You know, maybe who knows? Maybe they're really smart. They have a national show like Restaurant Idea Factory talking about them from foxbusiness.com. They might have a line out the door right now if people say,
It does go to my head, like my core customer real estate mind is like, if your core customers, you know, 65 and older, you know, empty nesters, they're probably ecstatic that there are no kids in that place.
Yeah.
So who knows? Tinfoil.
I don't know if it's a long-term play. I don't know if it's a smart long-term play, but maybe it's a land grab. Maybe it has some effect that way. All right. Netties, that's all the time. That's all the airtime that you get for banning. That means that Sean and I can't go to Netties House of Spaghetti in Tinton Falls, New Jersey.
I have to go down that way today. I'm gonna see if I'm gonna drive past it.
I was just about to say. There's so many things happening that I'm like, oh, well, we should ask Kyle because he's probably been to this place. Yeah. All right. Let's get into this first segment with our guy, Avi, reading reviews presented by Marquee. Marquee is a one-stop digital operations platform for no-touch digital menu and listing updates. They are crushing it right now, as so much of what we're talking about is like, you need to have a stronger digital presence. So Marquee we picked the right partner in them. They're becoming hyper, hyper relevant. And I didn't even realize this didn't exist when we had restaurants, Kyle, like going on here. So, all right, let's hear what Avi has to say.
Hey, Riff team. Let's talk about saving time when responding to reviews. We keep talking about how it's so important to engage with your customers, respond to their reviews, take action on their feedback, and encouraging them to keep coming back. Instead of reading you a review today, I wanted to read you a response. This restaurant gave the same response to all of their reviews in 1 month, dozens of reviews, regardless of star rating, review content, or other context. Thank you for your review, ! Please come back and see us again soon. I'm all for automating processes and saving time. Marquee was founded on that concept. But what does a restaurant give up, if anything, by using automated responses like this, or even a tool like ChatGPT? Can guests spot the bot? Love to hear your thoughts. Is this a checklist item, or is there an opportunity to add a hint of customization? Again, eager to hear your thoughts.
Automation coming up so much. We want to automate so many processes. Does it take hospitality out? Does it streamline hospitality? What do you guys think?
That's weak. That is weak.
Weak.
Go. One word. Kyle, you go. Why is it weak?
It's not this. If you're going to take the time to copy and paste, just that act alone shows me you don't give a shit. You're not genuinely responding to anybody. And it just shows that, I don't know, it shows like they don't care, right? Like, they don't care. Here, I acknowledged it. There was a place around here that did that. It used to say like, hey, you know, sorry, didn't work out. That's not what we intended. You know, reach out to us. You know, we'll set you up with a table or something next time. But I don't know. It just shows that it's not genuine. It's not a genuine, thoughtful response. There's probably a way to automate it with all this stuff that seemingly has come online the last month. but I, you know, ChatGPT and AI stuff that can be customized, but that copy and paste stuff is bullshit.
I think, Sean,
I'm very interested in what ChatGPT does for reviews response specifically, because that cuts to the heart of digital hospitality. Absolutely. It's the reason why I responded to 1500 Yelp reviews as a business owner when we first started. And I had trouble passing that off to a marketing manager because I was worried about the customization, the personalization of every single response, whether it was good or bad, to figure out where is that artificial intelligence? Does it understand the tone? So is it pulling data from something that I've responded to those 1500 reviews? Now it has a good data set to understand what do we want to respond into the future.
And you can train them to have your voice.
Correct. If it doesn't have a subset of my voice, now I'm worried. Right. You know, so like as a restaurant owner or business owner that's going to be using those tools, like just pulling from some other random barbecue restaurant to think that that has our brand voice, I don't think that that's going to work. I think there's going to be some sort of homework and due diligence that we have to do on the front end for the ChatGPT to be successful into the future. Otherwise, you're just going to know it's bullshit. It won't be genuine. You know, how do you spot the bot? You know, another great point is like, well, how fast do you respond to the review?
That's literally,
you know, like literally it's how fast do you respond to the review? Does it take 5 minutes? Because I'm okay with 5 minutes, but if it does it immediately, like someone posts a review and then all of a sudden Steven responds, like, no, there's gotta be a buffer in there. Like, I don't want them responding 24 hours later. I don't want it 17 hours later, but 15 minutes.
What were you and what are you currently? What's your respond rate time?
Less than an hour. And typically it's within 15 minutes.
Okay. So that's good. The only way I thought that automation might make sense to an degree is if you have some type of autoresponder. You see this on like Facebook Messenger when people reach out like a brand on there that says, we got you and we'll get back to you. And it's something that I believe in. Rapid response is something that's basically a core value within what we do at Best Served. And I will respond to people so quickly. Usually it's that less than an hour, less than 3 hours. If it takes 24 hours, I'm in a hospital bed somewhere, right? Half the time I might respond with, I can't respond right now. Like, I'll just be like, you know, I see you, I hear you, I got you later.
Yeah.
Because we're in the relationship business, talk about that a lot. And if you don't respond to me for 10 days, 12 days, 14 days, you're fucking dead to me. We're over. This relationship is done. And I was so busy. I just, this and that. We're all busy. None of us have any time. That's the world that we live in. You can definitely find a way to just throw somebody a line and say, hey, you matter enough. I'm just in the weeds at this moment.
I mean, it comes back to what we talk about with digital hospitality. When someone walks into your restaurant, do they matter? If they don't matter, then ignore them for 15 hours or 24 hours. But if they matter and you say hello and you smile right when you open the door, now how do you do that online? Well, you do it online with tools like Marquee. You know, like that's why we care about and we partner with the people that we partner
with. Rocking their hats.
I mean, it's no joke. It's no joke because it's hard to do across all of these different platforms when you have so many different people reaching out to you on Facebook, on Google, on Yelp. How do you customize that response so that people know that you care? Because we care in real life.
What if you were able to build it in where it was somehow, here we go, keyed in with 7 shifts, that it was able to read your schedule. You have somebody in your schedule assigned to be the person who's responding to those. There is a within 10 minutes response that is automated that can pull the name of that person from the schedule that says, Kyle will be getting back to you shortly. And then an hour and a half from that moment, because it's in the middle of service, whatever it might be, Kyle, in fact, does get back to that person. Then all of a sudden you've created this like, oh, wow, Kyle's getting back. And then Kyle actually got back to me. Like, so you could think about it in a way that creates that digital hospitality in that interaction and allows you to do that quickly and have rapid response. So there might be a way that you can think about it that way, but just the canned stuff, canned questions get canned answers, canned responses get canned feedback from your guests. And so you ask, how is everything? Everything is fine. Neither of those things was real, right? Yeah. So
Yeah, that's the Danny Meyer thing. Like, we're not responsible for everything. How's everything? The fish is good. My job sucks. Or, you know, like my car's broken down. Everything is not okay. Just so you know, Mr. So-and-so. But like, yeah, to me though, that is, you know, an opportunity. And it's the same thing. And I talk about like, talk about it all the time. The fact that somebody feels like they can just, it's the same thing as being in person. If you were asking me questions and I gave you guys both the exact word for word same answer, you'd be like, this guy's a fucking asshole. Just fucking repeating it. You know what I mean? It's not genuine. I think I could see it with my daughter every day. Those digital communications are just as impactful as actual communications one-on-one.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe more. They are the gatekeeper now for in-person communication. Like IRL only happens if you have a solid digital relationship. If I like your text game, I mean, fuck, you can make fun of them, but you'll have the game. He's a 10, but his text bubbles are green. And they go, it's a 0. You're like, what the fuck does that mean? That means they don't have an iPhone. Like, yeah. And does that matter? I don't know. Is it the reality of some of the way that we interact? It is. So like, we need to understand and have just understanding.
I interviewed this incredible 21-year-old for our show back in the day. And he told me, this was like 2 years ago. And he told me that he only does brand deals with principals when he meets somebody, that's anybody that's an entrepreneur, millionaire, billionaire. The first thing he does is he goes to their Instagram page. Have you produced any content? Are you active? And if you're not, you're dead to him. The deal's done. Doesn't matter how big the brand is, the deal's done.
Oh yeah.
And that was, you know, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, now when we look at same thing, we're vetting potential clients, we look at their Instagram page before we look at their website even.
Yep.
You know, because that's their ongoing
digital heartbeat.
Good at having a digital conversation. Your website's, you know, 82% static. Right. So that tells me,
oh, yeah,
messaging and branding. Oh, right. Shouldn't be 100%. And so that's interesting to me. If you haven't posted in 2 months, you're like, who are you talking to? You know? Yeah. All right. We're going to get into this next at large segment, unionization. This is coming up a lot. We've dropped these articles, we've touched on them a little bit. And Troy Hooper, for a Kiwi Restaurant Group's good friend to us, good friend of the show, challenged us, texted the three of us, threw this topic down, was talking about, you know, a lot of the big publications aren't picking this up because corporate money puts food in their mouth, right? And so it is the responsibility of us three idiots to have a conversation about unions. And he threw us a TikTok video. And we cut this down a little bit, but this will get the point across. So let's check out what Troy shared with us.
Restaurant workers at Rockefeller Center's Lodi are unionizing. Let's talk about it. Hi, I'm Caro. I'm actually a bartender at Lodi in Manhattan. And on January 25th, my coworkers and I went public with our intention to unionize with Restaurant Workers Union, a democratic independent union in the city who intend on organizing our entire industry. Since we went public, we've been subjected to a vicious anti-union campaign by Matos Hospitality, which is the restaurant group that owns Lodi, including fear-mongering among our immigrant coworkers, illegal solicitation of grievances, endless captive audience meetings, surveillance, all kinds of stuff. So I'm about to play some clips of some of my immigrant coworkers talking about their reaction to this campaign. You're going to hear Luis and Osvaldo and JC talk. But before I do, stay updated, show your support. Our Instagram and Twitter are right here. If you want to write us a solidarity letter, you can email it to us. We could use all the help we could get right now. By the way, this is our boss, Ignacio Matos. He's a celebrity chef in New York City. He owns multiple famous restaurants. Just keep that in mind.
Cuando yo llegué a Lodi, yo llegué muy ilusionado porque es un lugar con prestigio. Pensé que iba a tener más apoyo. Pensé que al ser latino y dueño, íbamos a tener.
All right. Playing on repeat there. So want to get a little of that. I know we definitely do have some Spanish speaking in the audience. That basically the rest of that video is about 3 minutes was a lot of the Hispanic community within that restaurant talking about their experience and expectations and shortcomings, all of those type of things. So Kyle, I know this is like you said, kind of big news up in your area. So get into this. What are your thoughts here on on this specific situation? Maybe you can address that, and then we can talk about unionization at large.
I mean, I know that it's, I mean, in New York, it's was always very desirable to try to get those union jobs, like in the hotels and things like that, because it was, you know, I came out of culinary school, a line cook, if you could get $12 an hour as a line cook, you were crushing it. But the guy over the Hyatt was making $25 an hour with benefits. Mm-hmm. But you had to sacrifice the creative piece, right? Like, you can't be as creative. You're going to be making Western omelets, turkey clubs, and New England clam chowder versus going to work some other place where you can flex your muscles a little bit. And I don't know, man. It's one of those things similar to like the landlord tenant stuff. Like, you got to find some happiness in the middle. The initial response is always like, this is what we want, you better listen. And the other side is like, F you, doesn't work for us. But the answer is always somewhere in the middle. And I think at this point, you have to have the conversation. I don't think it's something that either side is 100% right on. There's probably some way to make it work for both, but anything that's going to make a positive step, you know, particularly like right now for restaurants, I think this is something that we should really be taking a hard look at.
And what about this restaurant specifically? What's the word on them? Historically bad?
No, they're relatively new. Super, you know, super dope location. That Rockefeller Center area is like on fire. It was just considered, like, for years, it was just kind of like a mall below the ice skating rink. Mm-hmm. But now they got a lot of restaurants in there in that area. You know, Fifth Avenue is right there. You have some of the most expensive real estate, biggest retailers, you know, high-end luxury retailers on the planet that are right there. So for this to all be going down right there, it's pretty high profile. You know, it's not some restaurant tucked away in the Lower East Side that people are hearing about. You know, it's got a lot of employees. It's big. It's packed. It literally sits adjacent to where the tree is. So it's right there. So I think the location and its success is what's kind of bringing a lot of attention to it.
Understood. Sean, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's tough to hear somebody that's asking for help. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with anything that's happening, is that before, these voices were suppressed. But now, because of social media, people can share stories and people can be called to action. You know, that's ultimately what's happening, is people have been put into positions where they're not happy. They felt like they're getting taken advantage of. And because so, now they have platforms like TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and podcasts to get their voices to a bigger audience. And that bigger audience are either compelled to act or they're compelled to act against them. You know, that's the unfortunate part. And where do I stand on unions? I stand on the hospitality industry, and I can't build a barbecue restaurant without the people that I employ. And do I want to create a better culture and a better work environment for them? Absolutely, I do. I've spent the last 15 years, day and night, trying to figure out how to build a more profitable restaurant so that I can take care of the people that take care of my village. If I could do that, I would have done that. Can I do that into the future? I believe I can. I believe the things that we're doing will build a better future. Having tools like Seven Shifts to have the pulse of my team, so I start to understand, hey, I've got a bunch of bartenders that are not happy with their wages. They're not happy with their schedule. They're not happy with their manager. How can I address that before that becomes a bigger issue across multiple restaurants that I own or multiple restaurant groups? Like, that's the problem here. You know, the problem is that people's voices have been ignored and they haven't felt like they've been listened to. How do we get bad reviews? I mean, when a customer has a bad review, if lots of customers in our place and we're the only place in all of Spring Valley for them to eat and they're all upset, now all of a sudden it becomes a bigger problem. How do you address the bigger problem? Is you've got to have those difficult conversations that obviously this restaurant group hasn't had, or they haven't gone the way that they wanted them to go.
This was a challenging and will continue to be a challenging topic for me. And I'll just kind of preface this with, I've never worked in a union job, and I haven't really had deep, long conversations with people that have at the worker level or at the manager level. So I appreciate Troy and this show, honestly, guys. Like, there's a lot of topics that I've had to go deep dive into that I was severely undereducated in an industry that, you know, we're supposed to know something about. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to be forced to ask the questions. This was interesting from a kind of meta standpoint for me as well. I'm such a futurist, but what that means to me is that I'm obsessed with the future, and I'm actually very fascinated with the past and history. and I struggle with being in the here and now. So I actually know more about unions in this country and the history of it all the way back to 1768 than I do what's happening today. So Troy shared a couple of the resources and I went deep diving into a lot of what's happening today, and I still don't understand it well enough. So I'm going to comment by saying I will always believe in and support the organization of workers and the advocacy for workers. And that's hard for me as somebody such an entrepreneurial hustler that I always want to put the business first at my own detriment quite often. And that means in my own past that I put my coworkers, those that worked with me and for me, at a detriment because of that single-minded goal of the future and forgot about the here and now. So what's interesting, though, is right now, today, what I read is 68% of Americans support unionization. This is the highest since the 1960s. In the 40s, 50s, and the 60s, where we're in unions, were really big here. And part of that was also problematic because, you know, I say Teamsters, and instantly a lot of people think of Jimmy Hoffa and the mob and how corrupt all of that was. And there's truth to that for sure. The business model of a union has a lot of fallacies to it, as many as the business model of a restaurant does, right? And I think what's important for us to understand too is the context that we live in, where we're like one of the lowest percentage of labor unionized workers in the world. I think we're at like 10% of our workforce is in a union. 3% of restaurants are unionized. So even restaurants are a much, much lower number. I think there's a lot of factors that the fact that there's high turnover rate, it's hard to organize a group of people when that group of people is constantly changing. It's transient. I think that's problematic. But what we saw in 2022 and in 2023 is, I think it was like 250 Starbucks branches unionized. That's a pretty big number. We also saw Chipotle, Pete's Coffee, McDonald's and Taco Bell. I think they had some collective action happen as well. Trader Joe's. There's a few other big brands, a lot of it in the Northeast. Right? There was also a number of, I think, seven states make up half of the union workers, and it was Massachusetts, New York, Pennsylvania, right? So I think it's also something that's so in our DNA because it started in the Industrial Revolution. Anyway, I could go on and on about this. We're going to talk about it a lot more, but just for everyone to know, I'm trying to learn more about what's happening today so that I can support and challenge any of what's happening in this space. I will support the organization of workers always. I'm not always going to support the actions therein of the unions and the way that those are deployed. So that's a challenge as well, because believing in one and challenging the other, sometimes it's so black and white, to Kyle's point of you have to be on this side of the fence or that side of the fence. And a lot of time, even just the threat and challenge and recognition that people are organizing, people hop to, and a lot of times they say, oh, wait a minute. Okay, maybe we were wrong. And every time in our history that we've seen spikes in unionization, we had bad fucking practices, straight up. They were bad practices. And these aren't like lazy and entitled people, is another thing that's important. I think that gets thrown around a lot. When you look at the history of our country, the people that have unionized and gotten into collective bargaining are like mill workers, railroad workers, like steel factory manufacturing workers, like shoemakers. These are some of the hardest working people. They're not lazy and entitled. If you want to throw that around because you see kids these days at the forefront holding picket signs, fine. The reality of that history in our culture and in our country is pretty rooted in really fucking hard workers like miners. So I don't know. That's my take on it. All right. Anything else on that? This is like, this is like a heavy perspective.
Historical perspective, man. I don't have
that's where I go. I could even rip off like 5, 6, 8 acts throughout history that have had an impact on it, but I don't know what's happening today. This is a problem with me thinking, you know, future and past, and I forget about the here and now. And people are living in the here and now, and they're struggling, they're crying out for help, like Sean said. Like, they're not able to pay their fucking bills. We have to figure that out. We have to fix that part of the problem. And you can point at Why should McDonald's workers get paid $15 an hour because cops only get paid $22 an hour? Well, cops should get paid a lot more than that. Why are we pitting those two groups against each other? Makes no sense to me, but it's good for political fodder. So, all right, what are we getting into next? We are, we're staying heavy. Seven ship. We're going to talk. We're staying heavy this whole episode, guys. I'm going to need a.
Is that vodka? Jim?
Are you chugging vodka, homie?
No, come. I'm too old for that.
At least make it aviation gin if you're going to do anything. Let's go get some Ryan Reynolds gin.
Let's go get Ryan Reynolds.
No, God, no.
Never reach out to Ryan Reynolds. Emphasizing teams presented by Seven Shifts. I am pumped for this one. I want to give you guys a little context. Everybody watching, listening to this, we're going to hear from Maley Jacob. Jordan Bush, CEO, is our correspondent for this segment. We've learned a lot. He's challenged us. We've had some great segments there. Maley stepped in. Maley's been the one behind the scenes making this all happen on the Seven Shifts team. Love that you're wearing the sweatshirt right now.
Wish I had one.
Unsung hospitality hero. Shout out Maley.
Like, you got to get good at unboxing to get swag.
We're counting on you.
You got to get good at unboxing. Come on.
It was really, really great to see this. I also love that Maley is not somebody who gets on camera a lot. She said that to me and put something out that was, you know, it was like anybody who's doing their first video. It was awkward, uncomfortable, and it didn't say a lot. And I got on the phone with Maley and said, hey, there was one moment in what you said that I was so interested in. Can you, and are you willing to go there? And Maley was willing to go there and tell a deeper part of her story. I am unbelievably grateful for anybody that will ever allow us three, to bring out and amplify some of their story. So this is so meaningful to me and to us. So thank you, Maley. And thank you to anybody who's willing to get on their smartphone, get on social media and tell their story. That shit, if it matters, straight up, it matters. So let's hear from Maley Jacob over at Seven Shifts.
Maybe I should. So I'm an ex-server. When I was in school, I got a job at a trendy chain restaurant that just opened up in the city. And it was my first true restaurant job. At that point in my life, the vibe delivered on exactly what I wanted. It was fun. We partied. I made cash tips. I don't think tip pooling was a thing back then, but it was also really high stress and it was a very sexualized environment and it wasn't always filled with respect and teamwork. It was a really great stopping point for me, but I never saw it as my full career. You know, it was a jumping point before my real career. Looking back now, and with the work that I'm doing for Seven Shifts, but also shows like The Bear, we've all seen The Bear, you know, it just digs into how much things haven't changed, and that sucks. Things that I took as a whatever back then that I would never accept now, these things are still happening. You know, the industry hasn't evolved, at least not on a wider scale. So I think about the people now, ones taking that server job, working as a line cook, working as a bartender, the ones really passionate about the industry. And I think, how are we supporting them? How are we creating this great restaurant workspace that hasn't gotten the prioritization it deserves?
Damn. Maybe he's bringing the heat on a Friday.
Dude. We'll do some like outtakes or blooper stuff and show different, you know, versions of videos that like we end up making that we think are nice and crispy and ready to go. It was a transformation too. And I was watching this the first time, like absolute goosebumps. Like I had chills because I was feeling and knowing and understanding exactly where she's at. I'm going to jump in on this one. Maley, there was two things that I would say, two reasons out of the thousands that I believe have a major impact on the reasons that restaurants have not changed to the degree that you would want them to change. Number one is an adolescent mindset. Nobody becomes an investment banker, a lawyer, a doctor at 14, 15, 16, 17. So many of us get into this industry at that age. Sean was 13, I was 17, and we find our people. There's a sense of belonging and purpose that you find when you find a restaurant. And we hold on to that so tightly that we stay in this 17-year-old mindset until we can't do it anymore, right? We hold on to that. And so there's a challenge there that I'm always trying to understand for myself personally, especially. To give you some context to understand what that means for our industry at large, a third of our industry is under 21 years old. Another third is 30 or less. That is a very, very young industry. And unfortunately, we don't get out of that mindset quite often. We aren't given the tools, the resources, the support, the leadership, the training to be able to get out of that mindset. That's one of the reasons. And we hold on to it pretty desperately. We want to keep being that cool kid who's out partying and I still got it. I'm still the hot shit chef. That was for me. Number two is the business model. The industry standards haven't changed enough. We have copied and pasted the same P&Ls for the last 30 years and expected these numbers of occupancy percentage and labor percentage and pour cost and food cost and manager payroll. They've been fixed. And the reality is that business model doesn't work. Those are the two reasons that I would say restaurants have not changed and are in such turmoil and disruption right now. What do you guys think? That felt kind of preachy, huh?
Yeah, your homework for us was to be less preachy. I'll bring you guys the audience behind the curtain, but Jensen came in and told me and Kyle, said, "Hey guys, be less preachy."
No. I said that.
Work on the mic drop.
I said I'm super preachy.
Tell him.
I was hoping one of you guys would cut me off. I felt like I was giving a sermon right there.
So yeah, I felt like I was listening to one.
I'll take it from here. And Mei Li, thank you for your honesty, your vulnerability. It's why we created this show, is to have difficult conversations that other people were unwilling to have. And I can just tell you from personal experience, back to our opening up a sports bar in 2008, when we first hired, we thought that we needed to have female servers. And that was a misconception and a big miss on our part because of what we grew up with. We grew up with Hooters and we grew up with brands like this that had places where if men were coming to watch football, they were expecting to have female servers. I remember having a difficult conversation with my business partner, Corey, and just saying, is this the right way for us to build our business? That conversation led to us changing our entire outlook and hiring male servers and changing our uniform policy, making it so people were comfortable in their clothes, not sexualized in their clothes, and them being comfortable in their clothes and having male servers and having old servers and having young servers. No longer did it matter what they looked like or what their experience was. It was their heart. It was who they were as people and how were they able to take care of our guests. And what we found was the more that we looked for heart in their DNA, the better our business got. And that was very difficult for us to do, especially where we're located, hosting fight nights and hosting NFL Sunday Ticket. We were questioned on a lot of different turns, but it turned out for the better. We created a better environment. Does that mean we have the perfect environment? No. We have young people that work for us now, you know, young people that don't know the history of the restaurant. And it's my job, or my leader's job, to have conversations like this, to let people know that if they feel uncomfortable, we need to know about it, you know, and that's the difficult part. You know, that's, to be honest with you, that's the most difficult part, is that we expect them to be proactive when our job as leaders is to create that environment so that they do feel, what if they don't feel safe to say something? What if they don't feel safe to come? You know, the worst thing is, we have an open door policy. Fuck your open door policy. I don't feel safe coming into your open door to even say anything.
Yeah.
So that's a problem.
That's back to what Jordan said last week with those feedback loops. Yeah, Kyle, what's your thoughts here? Mei Li, shout out to Mei Li again.
Yeah, hell yeah. Shout out to Mei Li for sharing that, because it's, you know, it's at that time or any time. But I mean, to put somebody in that position, to me, everything starts at the top. So if you're allowing that to happen as an owner, as a manager, then you're perpetuating this belief that that's okay. And I think you have a responsibility. Your responsibility to the other people who work there, to everyone as humans, to treat them as such. To me, it's who's the best person. Who is the best person for this job? Who is the best, you know, best hospitality, best server, best cook, best overall, you know, fit for our brand. And it's unfortunate that it took things like, you know, the pandemic or unfortunate incidents that happened to bring this stuff to light. But for way too long, this industry has been plagued with stuff like that. And, you know, oftentimes nobody says a word, right? Yeah. And that's what happens. I remember my first situation. It was completely insane. Things I wouldn't even say on this podcast, which for me to say that is something. What happened at this restaurant while I was 15 years old, I was like, this is not okay. How does this happen? It doesn't happen at the insurance office. It doesn't happen at schools, at colleges, at, you know.
You said you're 15. A 15-year-old doesn't have the capacity, the experience to say something. And we stay in that mindset. So we're 25, 28 years old, and we're still in that place where like, well, I don't know if I should say something.
Right.
And that's a major, major problem.
Yeah, the impact you're having on those people, it could last forever. You know what I mean? It's okay. The young staff and older staff, anybody there, you're putting them in a position where they're there to make a living. They're not there to be abused. They're not there to, you know, they're part of this family, this team that you're building. It's completely outrageous and things that we would never, ever, you know, in our restaurant, if we ever saw that was immediate. Yeah, you got to nip that right in the bud, right away. Otherwise, it keeps going on.
All right, Maylee. Well, this was a very preachy segment, right? Right here, guys. I think it's important, though. Maylee, thank you so much for challenging us this way. We need to do better as leaders. There's zero doubt about it. All right, come on, Zach. Can we count? Zach, can you liven it up for us a little bit?
Let's go, Zach. Come on, where's my Ovation gear, by the way?
Here we go. We're gonna talk guest experience presented by Ovation. Zach Oates. He's going to hopefully get us up. And Ovation is a 2-question survey platform for real-time feedback, better online reviews, and happier guests. Let's get some of that happiness going here and listen to what Zach has to say.
Are you ready to talk about the big bad wolf of third-party delivery? Look, when it comes to third-party delivery, here's what we found when it comes to the guest experience is, there's going to be more issues there. But how do you take control of it? How do you take those guests from ordering and being a fan of a third-party delivery to ordering and being a fan directly from you? We've seen a lot of things like bag stuffers where you put in a, hey, order from us next time here. The problem is they just got your food. They're not ready to order. Or it'll be, hey, enter our email list. Well, guess what? A lot of people don't want to get more emails. The thing that we have found that has worked most successfully, even in asking for customer data, is asking how their experience was. People are willing to give their feedback. People are willing to say, hey, I had a good experience. I had a bad experience. But when you make it so simple of 2 questions, when you make it really easy for them, that is how you not only get the feedback, but you get the data to convert them to first party and get their email and phone number to order directly from you next time. So my question is, what are you doing to convert your third party guests to first party?
Yeah, Zach. The
Zach, thank you, brother.
He's always got such great energy. He's wearing the jacket, but he's still got a dope shirt on. You can always count on his shirts. So here's what's interesting on this front, guys, is here's what I want to say first. I love that he went for the Ovation is the solution, right? Like, that's good.
Don't steal my thunder.
Plug.
Jab, 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 right hook. I like that there's a right hook. We're on episode number 8. It's about time. So that 2-question platform changes the relationship into a text relationship, which we talked about, especially for the youth. And the future decision makers, it matters. All right, Sean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, the beautiful thing about the partners that we have on this show is that we not only believe, but use the products that are on this show. So, I mean, I am an Ovation customer at Cali Barbecue. Anytime I talk tech stack, I'm always celebrating Ovation. And that's because texting is the most personal communication that you can have with a guest. I mean, think about the people that have your cell phone number. You know, we have so many brands that have our emails, or we have brands that we follow on Facebook or Instagram. How many people have your cell phone number? And literally, how many people market to you in a way that you actually want those ads? Because they give you a text out, you know, like opt out. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you've got to be somebody very important, or we care about you enough to get into my cell phone, to get into my wife's cell phone, and to get there by text. And
what I text Zach, stop a lot. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, right? Correct. Yeah. I mean, what's even worse is when politicians get, you know, and it's political season, and all of a sudden you're getting bombarded with vote for this or vote for that.
I'm getting health insurance stuff left and right, let me tell you.
Or earned income tax credit. Yeah, I get those too. Yeah. But nonetheless, it's how do you make the relationship back to somebody ordering on DoorDash or ordering on Uber Eats, ordering on Grubhub? How do you personalize that relationship? You personalize it by asking a question. You know, by asking a question, how was your experience? And you get entered into an opportunity to win a $100 gift card, which is what we do at our restaurant. Now we have a personal communication. If some, like the amount of times that we've saved a customer from going from getting an Uber Eats order that somehow we forgot barbecue sauce, or we didn't include a jalapeno cheddar cornbread. And because of the QR code that we add in the stuffer, instead of them going to Uber Eats and asking for a credit or saying, you know, something was wrong with their order, they text us. They text my manager on duty with Ovation platform so that our manager on duty can go, we're very sorry that we forgot that. We'll be better next time. Here's a gift card for a free basket of jalapeno cheddar cornbread. Boom. Yeah,
you solved that problem instantly.
Now I want jalapeno cheddar cornbread.
Sounds good.
Starving.
Don't come to Restaurant Idea Factory hungry.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to try. That's the name of the game, right? Building this community around your restaurant, getting that information and being able to communicate with your guests one-on-one is, I mean, can you imagine that back in the day when everyone was putting ads in like the Penny Saver or like the Yellow Pages and like sending out flyers of menus? I don't know where those things are going. To find out who your customers are, you can text them. They can text you back. I was at even how about this for first party data? I was at a steakhouse in Midtown last night, very high end steakhouse. And the server it's two levels looking out on Fifth Avenue. Beautiful. And he's like, what do you think of the best table in Midtown? I'm like, he's not wrong. It's a pretty unbelievable table. Hands me a card. That is like, he's the waiter service for that restaurant. Like they've clearly given him this right to do that. And if you need a table, text him. Text him directly if you want a table. He comes in there. He's like, amazing. Look, what do you guys want? You try it. If you don't like it, I'll send it back. Dude, it was insane.
That's some New York shit. Like, I know a guy.
I got a guy. But that's what we're talking about last night. Like, because New Yorkers are screwed because we're so needy when it comes to the hospitality. But if you don't give it back, you know, if you don't give the respect back to them, like if you don't give him $20 when you leave, I'm sure he gets a lot more than that from a lot of people at that place. You're probably not going to get it. That's very New York way. But the fact that he's like, I'm going to send this out. He's like, order whatever you want here because dessert's on me. He said that's the first thing he said when he got up there. You know, and I thought it was next level. And I think owners had that opportunity too. So, I mean, it used to annoy me back in the day. Like we had a super small restaurant and guests who had my number would be like, hey, can you get us a table?
People do it all. They'd still do it to me today.
Right now, today.
But I want them to do it. But I literally encourage people. I'll go on TikTok Live and say, send me a message on Instagram and let me know when you come to the restaurant because you saw me on TikTok Live. They'll come.
They think you're lying and they don't take you up on it. But the ones that do,
all of a sudden they're making a TikTok video. It's literally happened. Well, I've had somebody in like Missouri watching a TikTok live. They're like, I'm coming to visit my daughter who lives in San Diego this weekend. They came to San Diego, brought their daughter to our restaurant Oh my God. Like I met this guy because of TikTok live. I mean, is that how we're going to get all of our business? No, but it's the personalization, right?
Yeah. If you want to scale, do things that don't scale. I love that quote. I love that approach. That's exactly what you're doing. And that's why you have the DNA to be able to scale. I'll just give a really practical thing because I think you guys covered our whole thesis of everything that we believe. And this is why it's important. This is why Zach is like putting this out there for us. I really like the QR code thank you video. We're talking about something as simple as that so often, especially for the opportunity of win back or for the opportunity to create an owned customer. I think that is incredibly important. And we don't recognize that these third-party platforms, they own that customer. You're just borrowing them for that individual transaction, right? And so many customers don't understand the financial dynamic at play. And they think that the restaurant's doing gangbusters the reality is a lot of times that percentage fees and all that is a pretty big hit for the restaurant. So there's a tumultuous relationship on all sides, and I think there's not a lot of transparency. The QR code video. Let's say that you have a Chow Now on your own site that you're able to order through, as I slam my mic, and you have Uber Eats, Grubhub, and DoorDash that are coming through the third-party platforms. And you're able to throw a QR code sticker on the bag, wherever. They scan that, and it comes and pops up a video. Thank you so much for ordering from us. We couldn't do without you. As an independently owned restaurant, a family restaurant, this means the world to us. And just so you know, we have a great ordering platform directly on our website. If you ever are able to come directly to us, it makes a big difference for us financially. And if not, we'll continue to serve you wherever it is that you find us and are ordering from. That, how long was that? 18 seconds? That could change the economics of your business completely. They may still be a Grubhub customer, but what if one out of six times they remember to go directly to your website? What out of those six times, another one, they come and pick it up from you because the relationship's been deepened. That could change your business completely because if 1, 2, 22, 154 people change their behavior to that degree, that's a big, big number. So we really have to think about that. That to me, Zach, is the actionable thing that I would do because it also changes our own behavior of how we're creating a relationship. That video, very simple, directly from chef, directly from whomever, and they get to know that person. So appreciate that. All right. Well, it was heavy and long. Please.
Is anything else we want to tackle, like climate or?
I know.
What else do we want to talk about?
I think we're going to get invited to like a G8 summit soon to change
alien balloons.
All the world's alien problems over here. real quick, see, this isn't even not heavy. We're going to end with this just super, super quick because it was just a really interesting timing. As Kyle said, hey, South by Southwest is like coming up already. Do we want to go? We're like 2024. And then saw this we have Ruth Reichel. Legendary food writer Ruth Reichel's documentary will play at South by Southwest in Austin coming up. I think it premiered at what's the one that Robert Redford does up in the mountains over here? What's that one? Not Cannes, Sundance.
Sundance.
I think it might have premiered at Sundance. Anyway, I digress. All right, so they did a documentary. Let me just touch on this. It was Lauren Gabbert did that, who's done a couple other in the food space. And I guess just my real quick take on it, because I haven't seen it yet. It's basically following a lot of interviews with a lot of farm workers and the food system and understanding what's happening in our food system, which is incredibly challenging system that we have. But I like that Rima Seal, Farmer Lee Jones, Alice Water, Karen Washington, some people that I know, some homies, were featured in that. So that was really cool to see. And I think it's interesting, this food system thing, we're gonna have to talk about a lot more, guys. We're getting hit up by people. Rick Boyd has shared a couple things with us about droughts, about what that means for the farm system. The farm bill is coming up again this year, which is kind of the marquee piece of legislation that started history, started in 1933 as part of the New Deal. To combat the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl under FDR, right? but I don't know what's going on with it now. I think it's 12 titles. Title one is pretty problematic because it addresses commodities, and there's huge issues there with who gets the subsidies therein, and it's a massive land grab to the top where these big companies are making that money. And I think at one point maybe. Oh, I don't know. The 1930s, we're at like 6.8 million farms in this country, and we're at 2 million now, right? And so it's pretty unbelievable what's happened there. I don't know. That's the things that I'm thinking about with that. I want people to check this out. Let us know about this film. You guys know anything about it at all?
I don't know anything about it. Sorry to say.
I just saw South by Southwest and Ruth Reichel. I said, sold.
Yeah. She wrote a good article recently, though, too, about restaurants, the state of restaurants. So, yeah, I love Ruth.
Yeah, she's big time, man. So
huge.
All right. Well, I think we'll probably end up getting into this a little bit more. Maybe this was just an opportunity to foray. And I like that there's some filmmakers talking about it. I think it's pretty important. You know, the unions, I think the farmers union that Cesar Chavez and them started hit 60 years old maybe last year. So it's pretty monumental what's happening in that space. And they are still some of the most underserved. One of our headlines was, you know, the workers in California are seeing health crisis stuff because of the amount of chemicals and things in these fields that they're working. So anyway, all right, guys. Whew.
Man, I need to sit down.
I'm like out of breath.
I need a drink.
That was a serious show. All right, next week let's have maybe a couple Hollywood segments and a couple of fun stuff.
Need some more TikTok videos in there. Less heavy TikTok videos.
There's a lot of people sharing some heavy stuff with us, and I don't know. The fact that they trust us to be able to talk about those things because maybe other people aren't, I think is great for us. But also, hey. We're also just some guys who want to talk about some fun parts of the industry. And, you know, I wouldn't mind when we just talk about New York style versus New Haven style pizza, you know?
Now that made me real hungry. That's not fair.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, everybody, tell us how we can do better next week. Go to restaurantideafactory.com for sure. That's where you can submit a topic or you can submit a headline that you want us to riff on. Clearly, we listen, we pay attention. We do feature things that are put in front of us because that's one of the ways that we learn and understand what's most important to you. Become a rifter as well. You can drop your email there. Follow us at Restaurant Idea Factory and on all the social medias as well. So good show, guys.
Amazing.
Let's call it there. Riff 008. Excellent show. And we will see you. We'll see you next week.
Later, guys.
Subscribe to full episodes Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn.